This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
It's the Adam Gold Show. Hayes Permar is supposed to be sitting in. Oh, there he is. There's Hayes Permar. Finally gets here. Decided, like, you know what? I had to go get my Bojangles drink from my car right before the show starts. You totally missed the intro I prepared just for you on this day, Hayes.
Was it Rod Brindamore saying, forget Adam Gold and just have me?
No.
That's the intro I wanted. Well, it must have been short. I mean, it was barely 12 o'clock. I had to stop.
You mean when the show starts?
I had to stop.
You mean
and
when
say,
the show starts?
I had to stop and say hey to Jesse, my friend at the front desk.
Okay, all right.
My bad. This is not a good way to start.
I mean, I played this for you.
My daddy is coming home on July 14th.
That's yes. Now I do feel bad.
Yeah.
July 14th. I must see my daddy for the first time ever on July 14th.
Yes. My bad. We didn't get to have our Con Air moment. I'm sorry.
No, ruined it.
I'm sorry. It is.
You went full Mason Marchman on me.
Happy July 4th.
I was ready for this to happen.
And it didn't happen.
Something that was already previously
planned.
Was planned.
Discussed.
We were looking forward to this date.
It was even announced.
It was announced. Yeah, people knew about it. This date was set.
And then it didn't happen.
And then it didn't happen.
We didn't get Mason Marchman.
Because you were talking to someone else.
My bad. I must have been, the walk to my car must be a lot longer than I deemed it to be. You know, like in radio time, you're like, all right, I know exactly how long it takes me to do things like go to the bathroom. I mean, it's personal, but like, you know what it takes, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know distances in this building that you can get, and now I just realized I need to recalibrate.
It's like, oh, I got 4 minutes. I can fill my water up.
Yeah, 4 minutes.
Go to the bathroom.
4 minutes.
That's
I can make a sandwich, eat it, and be back on.
I've done that.
100%. Give me 4 minutes, but no, I misread the 2 minutes I thought I had there. I am Hayes Permar filling in for Adam Gold, but guess what? If you were missing Adam Gold, don't worry. He'll be joining us in just a little bit to break down some of these Hurricanes moves. On the first day of NHL free agency, and the Hurricanes were once again active. I'm going to talk specifically with Gold about the moves and his thoughts on them. But then I'm going to talk in general about just how savvy the Canes have become and what their reputation now is, and how they remind me of another team that gets a lot of credit for being the sort of smarter than the average sports team in how they deal with personnel. And I believe the Hurricanes sort of had that reputation. But we have actual sports going on right now, so let's go ahead and get this thing out of the gate. It is the Open Championship, although I'm going to say a word about that right now, right? It's the British Open. For most of my life, people just said British Open. And then sometime like 5 to 10 years ago, golf people started getting really snooty and be like, no, it's not the British Open. It's just the Open. Almost kind of like the Office. Before there was the Office, there was the British version of the Office. And like super hipsters were like, I like the British office better, right? But people who were in Great Britain would have just referred to it as the Office, right? Because it started there and they were in Great Britain. So similarly, they get mad when we call it the British Open when it's supposed to just be the Open, right? But I think I've gone next level on this one, okay? Are you ready?
Okay.
I'm going to make an analogy. You know how like every year now for like 20 years at least, big stores and grocery stores and big box stores, the Targets of the world and what have you, are always a little more ahead of the holidays than people would like, right? So like in August, somebody's going to have Christmas stuff up, right? Not Halloween. Halloween stuff's probably already up. I mean, mid late July.
No. This is Christmas in July time.
Yeah, well, I know. But I'm saying somebody's just like, in May, somebody had their back-to-school stuff up. Mm-hmm. In August or September, somebody had their Christmas stuff up. And, like, yes, I've been the person in Target being like, whoa, why is there this Christmas section back here? It's usually a little tucked away a little bit, right? But, you know, I'm like, why is this here? But it doesn't really bother me. Just like there's many things in Target that I'm not there to buy that I just blow right by, right? Like, they don't bother me because I'm not buying them. Then there are people that, like, post on Facebook and all these other things, and they're like, why are the Target Christmas decorations out so early? This is all, they're ruining Christmas. Let me just have Halloween or whatever it is. And I think I've gone past the point of being annoyed by Target having their Christmas decorations out early and more annoyed by the people who complain about Target having their Christmas decorations out early. Much is the same with the British Open or the Open Championship. I don't feel the need to call it one or the other, and I don't feel the need to clarify every time I say British Open. I know you golf nerds say just the Open Championship, but I'm just going to say British Open. That, to me, the explaining which one you're using and why you do is more annoying than the people who actually get mad about people saying the British Open Championship. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's another one of those things in life where, like, the complainers have gotten worse about the actual problem. So just move on. British people will, you know, think that Americans are being ugly and entitled because they have to call the British Open, and we'll think they're snobs or whatever, and life will just go on. As for the actual golf, guess what? A guy from Wake Forest is leading a major champion. Wake Forest golf, they are the Alabama football of the golf world. Well, like, people are talking about this conference realignment thing, and everybody's like, I don't know, would UNC go with Duke? Would UNC go with Virginia? Like, when did the golf people get involved and be like, we got to get Wake Forest in the SEC? I imagine the SEC has pretty good golf programs. I feel like Florida, I feel like they have a good golf program. I don't know.
They might.
I know Arizona State does. They're out there. But, like, Wake Forest golf should be pulling numbers. Like, I don't know what kind of TV contract they have, but they just put out champions. Obviously, Webb Simpson, major champion. You've got Will Zalatoris is recently been contending. And this actually goes back for a while. The Curtis Strange is a Wake Forest guy. Lanny Watkins is a Wake Forest guy. There's two guys that I'm picturing right now. Haas. Jay Haas, Bill Haas. Just tons of Wake Forest golfers, especially for a small school. Oh, yes. By the way, also Arnold Palmer. Don't forget him, right? So, like, that he's probably a big reason why the legacy of Wake Forest of golf after him is so good, right? Any school that went to Arnold Palmer is going to attract other golfers.
He went to old school Wake Forest.
Yes, he went to Wake Forest when it was in Wake Forest. You can go play Arnold Palmer's old course, Pasco Golf Club up there. It's a nice little course, just nine holes now. But yes, Cameron Young, and this is one of the reasons also we say go check out the Rex Hospital Open when they're in town, the Corn Ferry Tour. Cameron Young was playing in that tournament last year. He got two wins on the Corn Ferry Tour last year, and he's done very well, tied for third at the PGA this year, I believe. He's had some other top five finishes, looking strong. No, I do not expect that Cameron Young will finish the weekend at the head of the British Open, but he could. You've seen people, I mean, John Daly was kind of a nobody when he came out and won the British Open, right? You could see it happening, but he is obviously a very good golfer and putting himself in a position to be a mainstay on the PGA Tour. Rory McIlroy is two back, also finished. He's at six under. He had a great round, and Rory is kind of the, if he's not the fan favorite, he probably is. He's definitely the media favorite. And it's partly because of his long legacy of being friendly with the media, of being a great golfer at a young age, of being a good golfer for his whole career, having spots of greatness, but also some times where he stretches where he hadn't won as much, including one where he's kind of in right now. He plays very well. But he's that guy that'll have the random, you know, out of contention for a major, but he'll shoot 60 on a Sunday and, you know, finish three back, even though he never really challenged, but just because he's that talented, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it does look like it's a little between the ears for McIlroy. But again, he's won a whole lot, so mostly he's been really good between his ears. But the recent news about golf this summer, the discussion has been about the split of the tours, the new LIV Golf Tour. It's been way more of a disruptor to the PGA Tour than I think a lot of those guys imagined. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize there was going to be this much money involved. You kind of knew there was going to be money involved. But if I had known 2 years ago, if they said, we're going to pitch these numbers of people, I'd be like, oh, well, yeah. I mean, that's when you start paying these dudes more money just for a single, just to sign up, than they've ever made for their careers total, and they've been at it for 15 or 20 years. It's significant, right? Rory, along with Justin Thomas, have been the two dudes that have basically become the player spokespeople for the PGA Tour, adamantly speaking out against the LIV Tour, speaking up for why the PGA Tour is great, defending it. Now we obviously saw Tiger this week because he showed up and he was making his statements, but Rory's the one the week in, a week out, he's getting asked about it and has shown that he's not afraid to talk about it. And especially, I mean, I know that obviously Rory joins the PGA Tour for a lot of reasons. There's money, competitive interest here in America over, you know, slightly more so than the European Tour. But that's where he's from. For him to be a European dude defending the American Tour as strongly as he is making him a huge favorite. Obviously, he's a well-liked at a British Open, right? So he's carrying a lot of pressure and expectations. And so a great way to see him start going 6-under today. I don't know what the betting odds will be, but I'll bet the betting odds after the end of today will be better for Rory McIlroy to win the British Open than they will for Cameron Young, right? Like, just been there before. Mm-hmm. Cameron Smith with a good round. There's other dudes out there right now. A lot more good scores in the morning than expected in the afternoon. It was pretty – St. Andrews is one of those courses. I remember playing it on Tiger Woods, and I would dominate this course. And even when you look at it, as a weekend duffer, dude who loves to shoot 90 and rarely breaks it, but, you know, can every now and then, I get up there and I see par 4, 345 yards. Let's go. This is my kind of course. And keeping it low on the ground, I always do that. Sometimes not intentionally, but
you're good at it.
I always know how fired up I am to watch a Masters, right, yeah, and see the course. I underestimate how fired up I would be to, like, see St. Andrews and just see them playing that course, seeing the shared greens. The bunkers feel a little bit like of a luck factor. Sometimes you can hit a good shot that just rolls for a long way and ends up going in one. But watching the guys think their way around the course, I like the fact that both there are drivable par fours, but also, like, greens that can make it super hard and bunkers that can, you know, just take shots away from you. Tiger Woods, of course, is of fan interest. Came out of the gate with a double bogey. Now, one of those strokes was his fault. He had a 3-foot bogey putt that he could have made and been like, all right, bad luck. So that was his fault. He missed a 3-foot bogey putt and had to settle for double bogey. The other part,
3-foot putt.
The other part was not his fault, and one of the worst rules in golf. He hit his drive. He hit it right to where any golfer would want to be. He should have had a nice little shot at the flag, which, you know, was tucked at the front of the green right near a slight little body of water that you got to get over. It's not even a body of water. It's like a leg of water, a little creeklet, a burn, I believe they call it over there.
Yes.
But his ball rolls into a divot. A shot taken by another golfer or either in a practice round or earlier that day. So whereas he's hit it in the fairway, he should be hitting on fine grass. Instead, he's hitting off sand. There's a rule that you don't have to hit off ground under repair. Mm-hmm. Like if it rains too much and there's a mud patch or they're fixing a part, they're trying to grow grass, and you hit your drive in there, well, like, you just get to pick it up and move it out of there, laterally or back, whatever it is, right? You should be able to do that in a divot. You just have to move a ball 2 inches back to be hitting a normal shot. And instead, Tiger Woods hits out of a divot, hits into water, double bogeys, and he's basically out of the tournament.
I'd say just drop behind the divot.
I mean,
like, take a step back from the divot, drop it.
You shouldn't even have to drop. I know for rules purposes and for uniformity, we have to make it like a drop.
Yeah.
You should just be able to Patrick Reed that thing and just tap it back a little bit out of the divot onto the green and just do what every golfer does when we're on the course of the weekend. If you play out of divots, you're a psycho.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. I don't want to demean people. Yeah, people do sports for their own reasons, but it's like, that's just not how it was intended to be, okay? And maybe if some, whatever. Don't hit out of divots.
Also,
and we need to fix it for pros. It's
replace
stupid.
Your divots.
And definitely replace your divots so that there are fewer of them out there. But we shouldn't have to hit out of divots. St. Andrews, a lot of fun to watch. A lot of guys chipping when they should be putting. Another weekend warrior golfer will tell you, 30 foot off the green, but it's totally flat and short grass between you and there. Let's putt that thing, baby.
That's right.
Are you chipping into these greens? Bring a lot of danger into play. Xander Schauffele was putting off a paved road today. You love to see it. That is the golf that I like to see. Bring me back to St. Andrews. But yes, Cameron Young, the story of the day, his round one. 8-under. We'll see how, again, he went out in the best conditions. We'll see how he holds up in other ones. Next up, getting out the gate, it is Your Carolina Hurricanes making moves yesterday on the first day of free agency. Now, remember just a couple days ago or a week ago, they traded Tony D'Angelo, picked up some draft picks, ahead of all this. So they're sitting on some commodities. Then one of the first moves we saw in free agency or that I saw was Vincent Trocheck signing a 7-year deal, was it? Long-term deal with the Rangers, which was...
Of all teams.
I know. I saw a lot of a common theme was like, this guy's going to be a problem for the Hurricanes, isn't he? Like, he seems like a dude that's going to be good for other teams. But no, Vincent Trocheck gone, not totally unexpected because he was going to get a good deal. He's been a good player for the Hurricanes these past 2.5 seasons or whatever it was exactly. Hard to figure out in COVID years.
3.5?
Yeah, I forget again. COVID years, yeah. But then the two big moves of the day. There were a couple free agent signings as well, but they picked up Brent Burns. My guy, there's a pretty good player. He's older, he's 37, but he was a 2017 Norris Award, Norris Trophy winner, so he's the best defenseman. Very good defenseman. Put him with Slavin right there. It's one of the best defensive pairs in the NHL.
Yeah.
And he likes to score, likes to shoot.
Yeah, he does.
There was good reaction to that of like, good. There were a couple power plays where it's like, man, I just wish somebody would just throw it on net. Like, let's get this thing going. And Brent Burns seems like a guy who might do that. We gave up Steven Lorenz, a goalie prospect, and maybe some future considerations. Getting to get Brent Burns and Lane Peterson. Then they missed out on signing Mason Marchment, which would have been a free agent signing. Guy was with the Panthers. He got down to the Canes and the Stars. It got to the point where Pierre LeBrun, who, as best as I can tell, is the closest thing we have to Adrian Wojnarowski for NHL.
Yeah, he's one of those guys.
There are a couple people that break the NHL free agent news, but Pierre was right on it. And he was like, it looks like the Canes and Marchments are getting very close. Mm-hmm. He's like, but it's not done. He's like, I'm not telling you it's done, but this is what I'm hearing. And then that allowed him enough room to still be accurate and be like, no, Marchments went to Dallas. So then the Canes hit another trade. Max Pacioretty and Dylan Coughlin from the Las Vegas Golden Knights, who needed to drop salary, and we gave them almost nothing.
No.
Literally nothing?
Yeah.
Future considerations. To break it down, we could go to no one else but our good friend.
Adam Gold in studio with my friend Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, how does longevity risk figure into our retirement and income plan?
This is the best of times and the worst of times, Adam. The longevity risk means we're going to live too long. But to me, every day I live is not too long.
Right, absolutely.
Good. So we want our money to outlive us. And unfortunately, many people I've seen, you out there listening, maybe one of them, your money is not designed to outlive you. You might outlive your money, and that's not what we want to have happen. Because when we get to that day after you run out of money, it's not going to be a fun time. So let's design a plan that guarantees you'll never run out of money. We call it the GPI plan, Growth Protection Lifetime Income. For the next 10 people, this is a golden ticket, Adam. $1,000 value, we're going to do it at no cost or obligation.
And all you have to do is call. We make it so easy. Would you like financial independence into your retirement and beyond it? 800-661-7383. That golden ticket is a $1,000 value, or you could text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
He is the Canes insider for 99.9 The Fan. You can check out the Canes Quarter podcast, which I believe he has dropped a morning after podcast as if it were a game. He's treating free agency as if it were the real thing. He's also, the host of this show, the Adam Gold Show. It is my good friend Adam Gold. All right, I got to start with this. There's all kinds. It's free agency. Rumors are out there. I'm throwing a rumor at you. Is the rumor true that you took the day off of work just to watch Tiger play the British Open?
Well, I never in my life could imagine you accusing me of watching Tiger Woods 4-over par through 5 holes.
It's still under per par though. You get a bogey per hole.
He needed a breakfast ball.
Be honest with me.
He drove into a divot on the first hole. Hayes.
I know. We're gonna talk about that. That's one of the worst rules in golf. No average golfer, no weekend golfer is out there playing out of divots, and it should not happen. It's literally ground under repair. It's literally ground under repair.
Put a little chalk line around it.
But we have more important things to talk about than the British Open because it's just the first half of the day, even though Wake Forest guy is leading. But let's talk some hockey. The main question that any fan tries to answer when their team makes moves, and now we've made several of them. We've seen players leave the Canes either through free agency or trade, and we've now had some players acquired through free agency or trade. Are the Hurricanes better right now than before the offseason started?
Well, no, because I think they're incomplete. They don't have a full defense yet.
Gotcha.
So right now Carolina has really just four NHL defensemen, in my opinion, and those four are better than Carolina's top four a year ago because I believe Burns is an upgrade over D'Angelo, and I really like Tony D'Angelo, so this is not a slight towards him. Burns is potentially a Hall of Famer. And he's still good at age 37. He's also bigger. He'll play less. He'll be more physical now that he doesn't have to play 26 minutes a night playing next to Jacob Slavin. So I think the Hurricanes are better in their top four defensively. Max Pacioretty is a really good piece to their top six and will make them better if he can stay healthy. So in their top six, I'll say yes, they're better. In their top four defensively, yes, they're better. But I think they still have some work to do. I'd love to see them add some size to the forward group. And they really need two more NHL defensemen. And they have to get rid of Jake Gardner's contract.
Knowing I was going to be filling in for you today, I actually did some research. I read about these trades as they happen. You know, there's a lot of places that do real-time grades and stuff. And everybody gave the Canes high marks in both of the trades. Which one impressed you more? The Canes have seemed to make now a habit out of getting the good end of trades in the Tom Dundon, Don Waddell, Rod Brind'Amour era. Which trade impressed you more? Getting Brent Burns, like you said, potential future Hall of Famer for merely Steven Lorenz, a goalie prospect, and I think some other future considerations, or getting Pacioretty and Dylan Coughlin for just future considerations? Which one impressed you more?
Actually, the joke to be made is that they literally gave up nothing for Pacioretty and Coughlin. Zero. Future considerations is a euphemism. I don't even know what – there's no player to be named later. Like, what are they going to give Santa rather Vegas? They got like a steak dinner? Like, we'll send you a tailgate package?
Sure.
Like a super tailgate package for Pacioretty and Coughlin. But the Burns trade, because I think that there was a lot of competition for to bring in Brent Burns. I think there were other teams involved. Not that you had to give up a ton, but you had to give them. I think Steven Lawrence is a pretty good fourth line player, and he's got size, and he's a good forechecker. So I don't think the Hurricanes wanted to give up Lawrence, but you're willing to give up Lawrence to get Brent Burns. I also think the goalie prospect is a legit, maybe future, you know, bottom half of the league number one. He's certainly a tandem goalie, I think. I think McEniemy can be good. So they did give up something. The conditional third is what? Whatever. It's still going to be a third-round pick. So just getting a guy like Brent Burns is more impressive to me. The Pacioretty signing, or basically, is a salary dump by Vegas. But also, Pacioretty only played 39 games last year, so hopefully he'll stay healthy. If he stays healthy, then he'll be productive.
All right. It looked like it was a relationship that was going to be, but at the last minute, the wedding was called off. I am, of course, referring to the Hurricanes' pursuit of Mason Marchment. What happened there? Was that a big miss for the Canes, and did that – would these other moves have happened anyway, or did some of these trades happen because they realized they were going to miss on Marchment, or how big was it missing out on him?
I was really mad that Mason Marchment cheated on the Hurricanes with the Dallas Stars. So, and ultimately, Carolina was left at the altar there. Here's the thing. I think Marchment would have been a better player for Carolina than Pacioretty for two reasons. One, I don't know that he's a better offensive player, but he's big and physical and fast, and Carolina could use somebody like that. On top of it, he would have been here it would have been a four-year deal for basically exactly what Dallas gave him, $4.5 million a year. And I think Marsh plays in your top six. So that's a really good player, 27 years old as opposed to 33. And at some point, the Hurricanes are going to have to stop the revolving door. You know, you have to have players. You know, you can't retool your roster every single year. You need a lot of continuity. And, you know, based on where they are, they're just not going to have it. Pacioretty is going to play 1 year here, and that's it. Hopefully we get a full season out of him. But Marchment would have been a really, really good player.
What's the biggest question right now for the Hurricanes? Is it what's going to happen with Nino Niederreiter, or is it some other free agency or rumored trade out there?
I don't think any of their free agents are coming back. Right now, if I was going to handicap which free agent might come back, it might be Ethan Bear. I'm not even sure that's going to happen. But I don't think Nino's coming back. There's really no spot for him right now. There really isn't. Unless they trade Martin Natchez, I guess, which is possible, but I doubt it. I think they want to keep him. They look at a value in Natchez. Andre Kasha is going to have to play. I just don't see I don't see room for Nino unless he's going to play for $2 million this year, and I don't see that happening. I think Nino will find a halfway decent landing spot on a two-year deal somewhere. But I think Carolina needs two NHL defensemen. They need a bottom pair. And, again, I'd like to see him add some size to their bottom or middle six. I'd love a big body in there who can skate and maybe score a little bit, but I think they need some size.
Are those players available in free agency or through trade right now, or is that going to be tough to find?
No, I think those players are definitely available through a trade. There's a lot of players, and we can sit here all day and list players, but there's a lot of players who are still available via trade. The free agent, you know, pickings are a little slim, but I think there's a lot of players out there that Carolina can, you know, engineer a trade for. And I always thought that their biggest work was going to be done via the trade route because they don't like to do free agency. They lost out on Mason Marchment. Maybe they didn't feel like they were willing to go where they had to go to get John Klingberg, who still hasn't signed, but Klingberg's not a third pair, and I don't see them investing a lot of money in another defenseman unless they find a spot to dump Jake Gardner, which they could. But, you know, if they buy Jake Gardner out, I don't think they're going to add another legit NHL defenseman. It would be great if they added John Klingberg. They'd have a great top five. But I don't think that's going
to
happen.
I feel bad the way everybody talks about Jake Gardner. I'm turning into my mom of sports fans, of just like to way too much like emotion. Like, I want Jake Gardner to play for the Canes and be the Norris Trophy winner. I want him to have the biggest comeback breakout year ever just because everybody's like, dump this guy. Got to get rid of him. Worst contract ever. Can't believe the Canes still have him. Hate Jake Gardner. I'm like, oh, man, I feel bad for the guy.
I understand what you're saying. Jake's a wonderful guy. It was probably a contract Carolina should never have signed 3 years ago.
Yep. Adam Gold, does Cameron Young hang on and go wire to wire in the open?
No, he does not. And by the way, don't screw up my total.
Man,
have you seen the total?
Yeah, I know. It's climbing. It's too much pressure. Like, I don't like you to be that high. I thought about putting like something that could wipe you out. I think I had maybe the U.S. women's national team plays tonight, and they might be like minus 5,000. And I thought about putting it all on USA. And just,
don't you dare.
just to win to like $2. But if Costa Rica pulls the upset, Gold's wiped out. That'd be epic. That's great radio, man. You need that. You don't need to win 5,000 fake units. You need an epic collapse. That's what you need. I'm doing
fake
it.
Fake units. They are exactly that. They are fake units.
We got to get you apparently 30 minutes across the North Carolina line to the nearest casino that is now cropping up and start getting these things in for real, Gold.
Maybe I'll just do the show from Cherokee.
You should. Yeah. Or no. Don't do it from Cherokee. You need to go do it from one of these Virginia casinos so that you can like specifically call out the North Carolina General Assembly. You could be like, I'm here. I could be in Greensboro or Raleigh or Charlotte or wherever, but I'm in Virginia because it's the closest casino I can get to. That's what you need to do.
bipartisan stupidity.
There we go. Adam Gold, host of the Adam Gold Show, insider for 99.9 The Fan on the Canes. Check out the Canes Corner podcast, and you can check him out back here tomorrow as apparently more moves are being made. We got a Sochenka now, too, that you can talk about tomorrow.
Depth goalie.
We'll see if any other big news happens. If so, you'll hear about it tomorrow on the Adam Gold Show. Appreciate it, dude.
Thanks, brother.
If any news breaks during this show, we'll also give it to you. Yeah, Sochenko was a goalie signing that happened just before the show. Basically, some depth at the goalie position because I think we gave up a goalie prospect in one of the trades. All right. Broke down the trades and the moves with Adam Gold. On the other side, I'll tell you why. I don't know how these moves will work out because you never do in a trade, right? I see people giving the Canes good trade grades, but I believe the Canes are putting themselves or have put themselves in a position where you should trust their moves, much like people do with a certain NFL team.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
I was here on time for this segment. Hey, man, it's Little Thursday, okay? I keep saying it wrong. I'm such an idiot. It's Little Friday. It's Thursday. Friday is Little Thursday. And I don't have to do the show tomorrow, so I'm basically on weekend time, okay?
Yeah, we noticed.
I'm on weekend
time. Here doing everything. Introducing the show.
I'm sorry.
Running the board.
I'm sorry, Dennis. Will you forgive me?
Maybe.
You're there picking peaches, it seems like?
Yeah.
Making videos? You're crushing it.
I didn't make a video. I'd send a picture to my
girlfriend. This morning in general.
Oh, yeah, that, yeah. So, yeah, I'm doing all these things this morning.
You took a picture of the peaches to send to your girlfriend?
Yeah, let her know I grabbed her some.
Oh, God.
Why not?
You know how she'll know you grabbed her some?
When I give them to her.
When you give them to her.
But she wanted confirmation.
The Carolina Hurricanes made some moves yesterday. They look good to me.
Yeah.
They seem good.
I'm
Brent Burns, good plays, old, but seems good. Heard him on the Zoom call. Seemed excited about coming, right?
He's played 679 straight games.
And one of the problems that I heard from casual fans in the playoffs, Canes need to shoot more.
Yeah.
He says, I like to shoot. Then Max Pacioretty, we trade almost literally nothing for him. We'll get to that. This Canes social media team was all over that. Mm-hmm. And I go, quick, I don't know anything about the guy, of course. I go, look, seems like he likes to shoot as well. An elite sniper, I see him described at 6-time 30 goal scorer, not 30 points, 30 goal scorers for Max Pacioretty. So we picked up a bunch of good dudes. But so there's every reason to believe these moves might work out. And now, of course, we saw Tony D'Angelo leave. We saw Vincent Trocheck leave. Those are two dudes who contributed heavily to the Hurricane success in the past season. So we'll see how it all works out next season. But there is every reason to have faith and confidence in the team that makes these calls for the Carolina Hurricanes that involves some combination of these four people and then maybe a few more. Mm-hmm. Owner Tom Dundon.
Yep.
General Manager Don Waddell.
Yeah.
Assistant GM Eric Tolsky.
Yes.
Sort of seen as like the smart guy in the room. It's almost like Dundon's the owner, and he's got the business decisive savvy to say move or not move, right? Waddell's the hockey guy. Mm-hmm. He knows the teams, the leagues, the people, the players. He's got the Rolodex. Tolsky is like the analytics guy. In the modern world, you want somebody crunching the numbers and saying, what's this guy's value and what should we pay for it? And Dundon seems to be in on the strategy of tell me what their value is and then don't pay a dime over it. And then Brendan Moore is the head coach, the guy that's got to say, like, yes, I believe this is a guy I could work with, or like in the case of Tony D'Angelo, yes, I think that I've talked to him, and I think that he's not going to upset the good team chemistry that we've developed here in Carolina, right? That's sort of somehow it goes. I'm sure it's much more complicated than that. There are plenty of other people and parts, whatever, but that's kind of the view that you get from it from the outside, right? Again, I don't know about these moves specifically, but for the past 3 years, a lot, overwhelmingly, the moves the Carolina Hurricanes have made have worked out. And in general, the themes have been along these lines. And they remind me of the New England Patriots and the way that people talk about the New England Patriots, where if the Patriots make a move or they sign a guy or they sign like an undrafted player to a deal, instantly everybody's like, what did we miss? What do they know that we don't know because it, you know, it looks weird? Or how do they always get to make the smartest move? How are they always like, we've got the same number of assets they could offer? So I feel like the Carolina Hurricanes, in their offseason moves, are acting very similarly to what the New England Patriots looked like for the long time under Bill Belichick. And that includes, what's one tenet of that? It is figuring out what a person's value is and not overpaying. Yeah. In professional sports, as much as it is building a team and X's and O's and camaraderie, and I'm not discounting all those things, but ultimately, because of the way they try and make professional sports in the United States, they do it differently in other places. They try and make them competitive across the leagues with salary caps, with different rules of how you can, you know, pick and get your players, with drafts, with free agency rules, rules that are designed to keep players on certain teams, you know, to give balance to markets, but also to pay superstars. All those things go into play to building a team and not being saddled with a huge contract is a big part of winning, right? In the NBA, what do you see? Like somebody stuck with a bad Russell Westbrook deal or a bad Dwight Howard deal that hurts the rest of your team because you can't go out and get other guys. In the NFL, same thing. Sometimes you got to pay that quarterback, and then that puts you in a bad position. If you go overpay for a running back, that's been like the wisdom that they figured out in the NFL. As much as running backs are good, they're only worth so much because you can find another guy that's just 21 and fast as lightning, and he may not be as good as the dude, but you can pay him $500,000 a year instead of $50 million a year, and then you could be good at the other positions, right? Why were the Seahawks so good for the first couple of years? Because they had one of the best quarterbacks in the league, Russell Wilson, at a very low deal, allowing for big deals everywhere else.
Cheap,
right?
Rookie contract.
That also involves, the Patriots are good at this, not falling in love with dudes, right? Obviously, you want to care about players, you want to treat them right, but when it comes to building your team, you have to say, this is a guy's value, and there is no, well, we like you, so we'll pay you 20% more, right? You can't do it. There might be a little wiggle room here and there. You know, maybe the team even determines, all right, we've got $2 million of emotional money to play with, where we'll pay a guy an extra $500,000 because he's been our captain for whatever many years, right? But you got to let dudes know, figure out what your value is. That's what we're doing, and we've got to pay you at your value. The other thing that you see them doing, and we talked specifically about this with Rod Brindamore a week ago, they like draft picks. Draft picks are two things. One, they're capital in trades where you don't have to give up players you like, right? You're like, okay, you can give up draft picks that other teams might need. And when it comes to the draft, when you're not picking in the top 10 or 15 where you're almost certain what you're going to get out of a guy, you've got a guy that you're going to draft and he's going to be in the league in 2 years. When you're drafting in the second, third, or fourth round, they admit there's some luck involved. So we're going to do our research, and instead of picking three guys in those middle rounds, we're going to try and pick six guys in those middle rounds, and our odds get better that one or two of them turn into, you know, top-line players in the next 5 years or whatever. So not overvalue, not paying anybody over their value, amassing draft picks, and then using those assets and being smart in trades. That's the other one that you see, and we see on display this week.
And not being afraid to let guys go.
Yeah. See, I mean, that goes into knowing what somebody's value
exactly.
is. Much like not overpaying for somebody, not worrying about, if you're getting value back, not worrying about, well, I don't want to part with a guy that we like on our team, right?
Yeah, for example, Vincent Trocheck signed a 7-year deal. It's like, okay, for the first 3 years of that deal, okay, good. But the final 4 years of that deal, I don't think are going to be that great at all.
Like,
it's a lot of money to be paying a guy who's probably going to be your third line center.
Yeah. They seem, in these trades, when they've got prospects or whatever to give up, they seem to be good at identifying. This is another thing I feel like the Patriots do. identifying the teams that are in trouble cap-wise, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason they went to the Knights, and they're apparently not the only ones on this, the Knights have mismanaged some assets.
Oh, right? Yeah.
They've overpaid and overtraded, and now they've got to move some guys. That's why basically Max Pacioretty and Dylan Coughlin, they were traded for future considerations. And it was so – the joke was how little they gave up that the Canes social media team, always on their game – even sent out a thanks and goodbye tweet to the future considerations. If you don't know what I'm talking about, basically anytime a player gets traded or signs away from the Canes that used to play for them, almost every time the Canes send some acknowledgement of thanks to that player. We enjoyed his time in Raleigh. You know, a couple pictures of him. Happened with Vincent Trocheck, right? You put up a couple pictures. Hey, thanks, Vincent, for the time. Well, the Canes social media team put up just a little – Canes logo instead of a picture of someone, it just said future considerations and said, thank you to the future considerations for your time with the Canes.
Your impact for the Canes will never be forgotten.
Yes. And it was basically a joke on how little they gave up to go to cash-strapped Vegas and get these other two players. So the Canes look like they're doing things like the New England Patriots. Now, in the NHL, we don't see as often, I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, you don't see a lot of – the Lightning have been the biggest dynasty of the past couple of years. They were only able to win like two in a row, right? It's rare that you're going to see an NHL team go on a run of, five or six championships in a decade or 12-year span. But the Hurricanes, their offseason being compared to the Patriots, not quite translating yet on the ice, but when you put yourself in the playoff every year and you continually get to the later rounds as they have three out of the last 4 years, well, then you just up your chances that it will become your year and you'll go home with the cup again. So they'll need to back up their offseason moves. Ultimately, offseason moves only matter if they get you championships, right? But if they get a Stanley Cup or they go to two cup finals in 3 years or whatever, it'll validate that they are one of the best offseason teams, and they have been in this Dundon Brind'Amour era.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.